Welcome. The March international break has come to a close. The next time we see international football, it'll almost be World Cup time. With that in mind, we make our predictions for Germany's World Cup squad. Who starts, who sits, and who will stay at home? And with the Clásico this weekend, we discuss the speculation surrounding Thomas Tuchel, Ralf Hasenhüttl, and Bayern Munich. Who will be roaming the Allianz Arena sideline next season? This is Tribuna Weekly. Hello there. Davis van Opdorp here with Jonathan Harding and Matt Ford. Jonathan came back from Berlin. He was in Berlin this week. Matt was basically working throughout the international break. So we're all back together again for the first time
in a few weeks,
definitely. We are going to talk about the international break, but we're going to do it a little bit differently because these friendlies in general didn't really mean that much individually. So what we're going to do to start is we're going to do a World Cup squad prediction. So we all have our 23 for the Germany squad, who we think that Joachim Löw is going to take to Russia. So we are going to do this position by position, and we'll try to get some of the definites out of the way, and then we can squabble over who we think deserves to go and who doesn't. So yeah, let's get to it. So so let's start with the goalkeeper position. I think this is actually one of the more interesting ones. Jonathan, you have written and you have talked to me many times about the fact that Marc-Andre Ter Stegen looks like he could be the primary option. It should be the primary option.
I think he should be. Barcelona's number one goalkeeper, and if anybody who watches Barca more closely than I do, and that's certainly a lot of people, they will be shouting now saying he absolutely should be. I mean, the guy's been in the best form of his life. He's overcome what can only really be described as a really difficult situation for him when he first signed for Barca with the whole Claudio Bravo thing. Hasn't always been fully fit in terms of injuries, but this is the season where he's overcome all of that, and I think it would be disrespectful not to start him. I think if Neuer is fit, then you take him. And I think a lot of people are giving me some flack online on social media for saying, well, Neuer's the captain. How can you not start him? He needs 10 minutes and he'll make 500 saves. Quite frankly, I appreciate that. And I imagine that Löw will probably go that way. But I think you have to start Ter Stegen. So I would take Ter Stegen. Neuer, obviously, if he was fit. But I would start Ter Stegen, which might be a bit controversial. But I think after an entire season with no football, actually, it's not that controversial. And my third choice would be Sven Ulreich.
So that's the
and I can explain why, but
the first shortfall. So, but let's go back to the Ter Stegen and Neuer debate. Matt, what do you think? Do you if Manuel Neuer is fit and plays, let's say, maybe even five matches for Bayern Munich at the end of the season, should he start at the World Cup?
No, I agree with John, and I think John's gone through the reasons as to why Ter Stegen deserves to be there. I think the one reason you actually omitted was the calming influence and experience he exudes over the dressing room as well. Comes across as eloquent, as calm, as a thinking goalkeeper, and exactly the sort of personality that you want at a World Cup. But yeah, added to the reasons as to why Ter Stegen should go, I think unfortunately the game against Brazil probably showed the reasons why. Why Kevin Trapp shouldn't go, and it was unfortunate because he came across as nervy. He was almost caught in possession a couple of times. I thought he should have done better with the goal. Right, the header was straight at was well struck. It was going at pace, but it was straight at him, and I think your wrist has got to be a little bit stronger there.
John, you're wincing in disagreement.
No, it's tricky. I get what you're saying, but I think in that instance, either he's trying to palm it or wrist it over the goal.
Right.
But actually at that distance with the pace on the ball, it's quite difficult to do. And if you don't get the perfect angle to wrist that up over the goal, then it's just going to go in.
Well,
you palm it out, it goes straight back to him and he taps in on a rebound.
Well, as a defender, I have to ask.
Well, you can't lose the header.
Well, that and why wasn't Antonio Rudiger in that area?
Rudiger drifted out left because Plattenhardt ended up in the middle.
Right.
The whole thing was a complete mess. They ended up with Joshua Kimmich marking three.
Positionally, it was a nightmare. But the problem comes from the ball, though, that ball out there should never have had time to cross it.
Exactly. Right. But I mean, yeah, as much as we can get into the technicalities as to whether Trapp
no,
should definitely have saved that or not. The fact he's only played 9, or is it now 10 games for PSG this season. And just like we were saying, for Neuer, as good as a goalkeeper that he might be on his day, for a tournament, you need players who are on form. Going into the tournament on form, playing regularly week in, week out, making those reflex saves so that precisely those sorts of little errors where your wrist doesn't quite stay strong enough to get to deflect the ball over the goal, so that doesn't happen. So for me, I also agree that I'd also take Neuer. But I'm not going to disagree with John there. I think, for me, also Ter Stegen to start, Neuer also to go. Sven Ulreich, I can definitely see that. Personally, I've gone for Bernd Leno.
Okay, Bernd Leno as well. We'll talk about him in a second. The only point I wanted to make about Manuel Neuer is I feel like he's still such a world class player and such an elite talent that it would be really difficult to leave him on the bench. Not just because of the way he can of his shot stopping ability, obviously, but because the fact that against Algeria he was playing basically as a defender and coming into tackles near midfield. And now, of course, that was 4 years ago, and maybe at his age, he turned 32 this week, and maybe with his foot injury, he won't be able to do that anymore. And that would be a very valid reason not to start him. But to me, I feel like if he is still fit, he's still as cold as it would be to Marc-Andre Ter Stegen. If Neuer's fit, he's still the best option in my mind.
And I can understand that. And quite honestly, I think Joachim Löw is thinking exactly that. Manuel Neuer is the number one goalkeeper in Germany if he's fit and he plays the last four games of the season. I think there's no doubt about that. I just think at some point, you know, this is probably going to be Manuel Neuer's last World Cup. And you have to... How you talk about cold, I just think it's also disrespectful. What does Marc-Andre Ter Stegen have to do?
Right.
You talked about Manuel Neuer against Algeria. Have you seen how well Marc-Andre Ter Stegen has played with his feet
this
season?
Yes, he is very good with his feet as well.
You're effectively not losing that part of Neuer's game by playing Ter Stegen. I think that's a huge bonus. Any Barcelona fan will tell you who gets to watch him every week will tell you how he is capable of being involved in the play. And his distribution
is
phenomenal.
Yeah.
40-yard passes out perfectly out to the wing back or whatever it is. So,
and for all Neuer's revolution, like that part of goalkeeping, he's also not kicked a ball in 4 months.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or had a ball kicked at him.
Yeah.
Right.
And when it comes to a World Cup, it comes down to those moments, those single moments, which a slight tiny percentage lack of match fitness is going to cost you. That's for me why, unfortunately, Manuel Neuer, as important a figure as he is, should definitely be in the squad, but wouldn't be my first choice at the moment.
All right, so we've got our first two choices, definitely. We have two different third choices. So you wanted to make your case for Sven Ulreich, so why don't you make it now, Jonathan?
I think the third goalkeeper, you're never expecting to play him. So you need a character. This always comes down to character. And I think beyond probably in the entire squad, beyond 16, 17 players, it all comes down to character. Those last 6 or 7 players, it's just the right person to fit the group, in my opinion. So your third choice goalkeeper has to be a goalkeeper who's going to give it 150% in training, have good interaction with the other two keepers, push them really hard, and be the right type of guy to have around in that environment. Bernd Leno is absolutely one of those guys. No doubt about it. I just think Sven Ulreich has come off the season of his career.
Mm-hmm.
And in my opinion, is probably Bayern Munich's player of the season, given how nobody expected Neuer to be out this long, and Bayern could go win a treble, and Sven Ulreich is their goalkeeper, which I don't think people are making enough of.
Yeah.
They might have all these wonderful stars, but Sven Ulreich has done an incredible job at the back. And he's never going to be in Germany contention or World Cup contention again, but I just feel like he's the right kind of character. He's super positive. He's just happy to be here. He's been asked 3 or 4 or 5 times about being in the national team. And he said, look, with all due respect, there are better goalkeepers than me. He's super calm, very, very modest, and he would be over the moon to have an opportunity like this. And I think that kind of positivity would rub off on other players. That's why I think I'd give him a go, because Bernd Leno has been in and around the national team for long enough. As much as I think he would also just relish the opportunity to go, he'd probably be a bit like, wow, I'm never going to get past being the third or fourth best goalkeeper in Germany. I'm never going to get above that. Whereas Ulreich doesn't even cross his mind, that thought, because he's like, wow, I'm in Russia with Germany. How amazing. I'm Sven Ulreich. I should really be playing for Stuttgart, you know? So I think that's the kind of character that you want in this team.
Yeah, he should be playing for Stuttgart. He should go back to Stuttgart. Stuttgart just take a long look at him. But he signed a contract extension. That's not going to happen. Matt, did you want to make a stronger case for Bernd Leno?
I can't make a stronger case than that, can I? Yeah. That's absolutely convinced me. A passionate personal plea from John Harding to take Sven Ulreich to the World Cup.
It's a really interesting point, because Sven Ulreich, if he was to go to a World Cup, this would probably be his last chance.
But he doesn't even see it as a chance. That's why I think he'd be such a good guy to take.
Right.
I think that's all true.
But if you just look at the age, I mean, I'm looking at just that statistic.
I think that's fair. I think it's a great personal story as well, and I'd have absolutely no qualms about it. Yeah. And yeah, in terms of his personal story and development and his situation, and in terms of him probably deserving it after this season, yeah, that's absolutely fine. The only argument you say against it would be perhaps just looking slightly more pragmatically and further ahead. Would it be a better option to take? I think, well, Bernd Leno is slightly younger, isn't he?
Definitely.
More years left in him. Who knows what will happen in future?
Yeah.
Take a younger goalkeeper to the World Cup with you.
Honestly, Love will do that. He will do that.
Well, this will come up, I think, throughout this whole exercise for me, is that I think Love already has his guys. Mm-hmm. They're not necessarily the best guys in any case.
No, but they're his guys.
But they're his guys. And Kevin Trapp was one of his guys, mm-hmm. which is why he got one last chance in Berlin to start against Brazil.
He got his last chance in the second half.
Yeah.
When he was supposed to be off by that point.
Yeah.
So I think that will come up, be recurring. I think Bernd Leno is one of the guys. There's a reason why he started the first game of the Confederations Cup in the summer. And yeah, I understand. I mean, it's the third goalkeeper spot, so it's not like we're talking about
anything
important.
But I think that's exactly it. We just talk about fringe players and picking the right character. And I don't want to sound over analytical, but picking the right character for your third choice goalkeeper
I don't think it's over analytical. I think it's come out from quite a few sources and quite a few players
and
people around the squad of what a key role that played in Brazil.
Yeah.
And there were no tensions in that squad.
Yeah, and you also consider the fact that Ulreich, a lot of his teammates are going to the World Cup and Bayern Munich players. So speaking of those teammates, let's go on to the defense now. Why don't we get the locks out of the way first?
Okay, Hummels and Boateng, everybody, right?
So we know that they're going. Do we have any more locks?
Let's just stick to centre-backs, right?
Just centre-backs for now.
So Hummels and Boateng are your starting two. I think everybody's agreed. So then it's the two backups.
I'm taking Niklas Süle as well, given his performances this season.
Agreed.
Okay, so he's not as much of a lock for me, but I think he's probably going to go.
Yeah, Bayern Munich.
Especially since his move to Bayern.
I wouldn't say he's absolutely nailed on, but no. He's
got to be at least 70%.
He's surprised me the way he stepped up. I think he's taken his chance really well. I thought of the two Hoffenheim players that Bayern signed, I thought Sebastian Rudi would be the one who would be more likely to step up, because he would have had that time on the ball to dictate the midfield in the way that he liked to do, but he's... he's not had that many chances, but I don't really get the impression he's taken them anyway. Niklas Süle, on the other hand, I think he's been absolutely solid. He's even chipped in with a couple of goals. And that tackle that he put
against Brazil.
Yeah, that was against Douglas Costa.
In the second half.
That was amazing.
Perfect timing.
Should have been R-rated. That was so good. Incredible.
Approaching the six-yard box, tackling him from behind, won the ball, clean as a whistle. Absolutely fantastic. So for me, that just put a little... icing on the cake.
How was that in the stadium? Because you were there, obviously.
I mean, there were lots of things that were strange about the stadium, but the screaming of the Brazil fans in anticipation of a goal and then a goal was one thing, but then the denial of a goal and this whole collective applause and cheer from Germany at what was basically a textbook sliding tackle in the box. It was perfect as well. It was like slow motion.
It was a Bobby Moore on Pelé moment.
He's got to make it.
Does Germany have the best slide tackling central defenders in the world? Maybe not the best central defenders in the world.
I've never seen a stat to back that up.
I'm thinking of also Benedikt Hervis at the Euros.
That was a great
basically
tackle.
Going full out on his bum.
If they do, then that also suggests that they are the worst positioning defenders in the world,
which could also be true.
I remember the Xabi Alonso quote that tackling should never be a part of the game, and if it is, then it's a last ditch attempt.
Precisely.
So that's why John Terry was so good, because he was always making tackles, because he was always in the wrong position. Anyway, fourth choice defender then.
Before we continue with this, we need to also establish one other thing. How many defenders do you think Löw will take?
Four centre backs.
Because he took five to Brazil.
I've got four.
That's why I'm asking.
I've got four centre-backs here as well.
I have four as well.
Okay.
Do you think he's going to take more than seven defenders in total?
The reason, I've got seven defenders altogether.
Okay.
I think he might take five if he wants to play three at the back. And bearing
right,
in mind
that's
what
I'm thinking.
Yeah, and bearing in mind what Boateng said, he might take another one. But I think four is a definite.
Okay.
Who's the fourth then?
All right.
I'll tell you, Rudiger for me.
I have Rudiger as well.
Oh no, boys!
Well, but
he's one of the guys. That's
absolutely right. Right, yeah. That's absolutely right.
I don't
Antonio
think
Rudiger
he should go. I really don't.
Then you shouldn't have picked him.
Yeah, but I'm not. I'm predicting who I think is going to go.
I would have.
I would have
picked Matthias Ginter. Now,
yeah, he's definitely the other
on
guy.
His character, not necessarily on his play. I don't think he's a fantastic player per se, but he's been there before. He is a World Cup winner, mm-hmm. right? And
I made my list before his brilliant comments.
His brilliant comments. And I was there for that press conference where someone asked him, and I was about to when he texted me saying, ask a question. I was like, I'd like to ask him. And then someone asked that question. I was like, no. And the question was, you know, what do you think? Do you think Neymar is worth 222 million? And Ginter's response was, well, I think Neymar's a fantastic player, but no one's worth that. And quite frankly, I was transferred for 17 million and I'm not even worth that. Mm-hmm. He's such a humble guy. I think he's got the right type of characteristics to be the fourth choice. I agree with you though. He will take Rudiger. He's one of the guys who plays in the Premier League. Yeah. I just don't think he's that good.
I thought he was good against Brazil. That was the best game I had seen him play. And
he was all right.
He was all right, but that was the best game that he had probably played in the.
I think he justified
the selection than he had in previous games.
Admittedly, I've not watched a great deal of him at Chelsea this season, but from what I've seen from him playing for Germany, I think it suited him really well playing alongside Jerome Boateng.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think that classic centre-back partnership of ball winner and ball distributor, I think that works quite well there. Whether Rudiger's playing with Hummels or with Boateng, because the other two have such a great range of passing, I think that worked really well. Rudiger and Zula would not be a starting pair for me.
Yeah.
But I can't see it coming to that either. So.
If he does take five, then I think he takes Rudiger and Ginter.
Right, I think so too. So we think that Skodran Mustafi is completely...
I think he's lost his spot.
Yeah.
Not for me.
The other defenders that he probably could take would be...
He won't take Jonathan Tah.
And Jonathan Tah, I think, is the only other one. And Benedikt Hrvatas has not played this season.
For the same reason that he couldn't start Neuer, he couldn't take Hrvatas.
Okay, so now let's go on to wingbacks. I think this is a little bit more obvious, which is...
There are only two that he'll take, sadly.
You think he's going to only take two?
Yes.
I've got two/three, but my third is a bit of an outside chance.
Oh, I think he takes three.
Hector.
Well, Davis, you're probably not including Kimmich, are you? You're not.
I am.
You're not a Kimmich fan today.
No. Okay, so this. By the way, this is because we were doing a combined Borussia Dortmund Bayern Munich 11, and I made the case that if you were to include another Dortmund player into a combined Bayern Dortmund 11, you could make the case that Lukas Piszczek could be in that team, considering the fact
ahead of Joshua Kimmich.
Considering the fact that in the last 32 games in which Lukas Piszczek played, Dortmund has not lost. That's the only grounds that you could possibly consider putting another Dortmund player, aka Lukas Piszczek, into the team.
I think 3 years ago, Lukas Piszczek and his hip would have agreed with you, but today. He's a broken man.
I'm glad you got a chance to put that out there anyway.
But anyways, this is irregardless.
The internet
Josh,
has had
its say. Joshua Kimmich is
so Hector and Kimmich. Who's your third then?
Well, I think he's going to take Plattenhardt. I don't think he should play Plattenhardt, but I think he will. He's going to be the number 23, the 23rd person on the squad.
You picked Max, didn't you?
I think he's going to be...
You picked Max, didn't
you? Only because you've been reading my piece of paper. Yeah. I don't think he will take Philipp Max.
I love him.
I think it's absolutely no chance. In fact, Lerv's even said, he said in the press conference that no, he's not in my thoughts at all at the moment, so forget that.
Shot him down.
However, I disagree with Herr Lerv there. Is it 13 assists from left back for Augsburg this season? Reportedly attracting interest for Manchester City over the winter. Is that 13 assists? Is that a record for either a left back or just an outright record
for a
defender?
I think it's a record for wing backs
in the Bundesliga. If we're talking about taking players on form, then he's your man. The only downside I can see to it is that he's obviously much more of an attacking fullback, and I think Germany have such a wealth of attacking options that it might be a better option. It probably would be a more sensible option to have someone like a Plattenhardt or more like a Jonas Hector.
Although I think Plattenhardt is also an attacking fullback.
In behind them.
I think the reason he takes Plattenhardt, probably, and I tend to agree with you that he might, is because he's a set-piece offering, which right. also would make sense to take Max because he is too. But I think if you're going to take a backup wing-back, you should take Max because I'd rather have a defender that offered something from play, a.k.a. Max's crosses.
But in front of him, whether it's Sané, whether it's Gertz,
don't you think?
I think Max puts in a better service.
Better service? I think we can talk it when we get to the wingers later, but I thought Plattenhardt played much better when Julian Draxler was on the left mm-hmm. rather than when Leroy Sané. So I think that mixture needs to be correct for him to succeed. But no, I think that his service is great.
I'm not saying it's not. I just think Max's is better. The issue for me is if Kimmich goes out, they don't have a right back.
Well, yeah. I think Rowan Boateng or we'll get to midfielders.
And you play back three then, don't you? And you have to say, well, then you drop and you ask a winger to drop.
Yes. Even Jonas Hector slides over. Yeah, and
all right, well, let's get to midfielders because there's so many other factors that could factor in.
Central or wingers?
Let's start with central for now.
I think there are four locks.
Well, I divide it more into defensive and attacking midfielders rather than central and wide. Okay.
I think there are four locks in the middle.
Okay, so
absolutely four locks.
Toni Kroos.
Yeah.
Sami Khedira.
Yeah.
Leon Goretzka.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of trying to guess your fourth. Okay, going on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Those four players.
Although Gundogan did his very, very best to get himself deselected against Brazil.
Yeah, he's still going to go.
He's been in fantastic form for Man City, and mm-hmm. other than that game, he's been fine.
Yeah.
No, for me as. So, if you always, I'd always start with two of those three as defensive midfielders.
I'd start with Gundogan and Kroos at the moment.
So for me, it'd be Khedira, Kroos.
I have five central midfielders that are going. So the fifth one.
Are we all agreed that those four are going to go?
I think so. I think that Goretzka.
Yeah. Matt, Kroos, Goretzka, Gundogan, Khedira.
I was going to say Goretzka and Gundogan. I think are less locks, obviously, than the first.
Just realised I've left Goretzka out of my squad here.
Okay.
Leon's not happy.
Leon's not happy.
Serves him right for a.
For moving
selling Schalke out.
Okay, who's your fifth one, Davis?
I think Emre Can is one of his guys.
Interesting. I have not picked Emre Can in my squad.
I didn't either first, but then our friends Sophie and Ali, who are our beautiful French friends that cover the Bundesliga, they said, yeah, but Emre Can's one of his guys. Antonio Rudiger is one of his guys.
I absolutely agree. But
you're
going to have to lose a winger. You have to lose a winger to fit him.
Yeah, and I don't. Yeah, or you just don't take Sebastian Rudy.
I haven't picked Rudy either.
I haven't either. So he's out.
He's out.
So you only have four central. midfielders.
I have four central midfielders. I think he probably takes five because if he plays, he could play 3-5-2, and then he needs another one.
Right.
And he probably loses a winger that I've picked because I've picked. Five wingers.
Okay, should we just get right into wingers too? Since we're already in midfield, or do you want to say anything else on holding midfield, Matt?
Who have you got in your midfield then?
No, that's fine. Yeah, Kroos, Khedira, Gundogan. Where Goretzka has slipped my mind is because I've actually ultimately included Royce, although I would take him.
Get to the locks with wingers first. I think Marco Reus deserves at least 5 minutes because
it's a really interesting conversation. He's out again this weekend.
Yeah. Yes.
And yet since he's been back, was it three goals and an assist in five performances? Absolutely. He's been Dortmund's main. Might have been their one ray of light in some pretty dreadful performances in recent weeks.
But you look at the domino effect, I think, if you include him in the squad. I mean, if you put him in the squad, that means that Julian Brandt's probably not going
to
go.
No, Julian Brandt has to go, in my opinion. I thought he was one of the best.
Even with Marco Reus, you don't think that Julian Brandt's status in the squad is dependent on Marco Reus?
No, I think Julian Brandt has to go, Reus or not.
I think if you're taking either Goetze or Özil or even both, then on Brandt's performances this season, there's no room for him.
All right, well,
he's been one of the better players in Germany.
Let's stick with wingers now before we get to like behind the striker. So because
Sané's a lock.
Since we're throwing a lot of names out,
Sané's a lock.
Sané's a lock. Yeah,
he starts.
Got Sané.
We'll talk about that. Julian Draxler, who I consider a winger,
to me he's a starter.
Yeah, he also goes.
He's the starter, I think. All right, then you have if you're counting. Thomas Müller as a winger. Do you count him as a winger or a forward?
Yeah, we can count him as a whatever.
Winger.
Yeah. Thomas
Müller
is Thomas
Müller.
Yeah. He's obviously a lock. Yeah.
He's obviously a lock. Anyone their wingers? So
that's three.
That's three. Yeah, I mean Leon Goretzka has played on the wing as well.
He's central for me.
Yeah. So Julian Brandt is also really interesting because he's been called up every single time there's been a Germany squad selection since the start of 2017. So he's been included in every single squad, which would make you think that he is also one of Löw's guys. And I think what's interesting about him too is that when he played wing back, I think in September, he actually played it decently well. And I think if Kimmich gets hurt, I think you play a back three with Julian Brandt as the wing back. I think that is the best option because you would play Thomas Müller and Julian Brandt on the same flank, and both of them have do defensive work. So I think I'm inclined to agree with you, but the whole thing that messes this up is Marco Reus. Mm.
I think Julian Brandt, his performance against Brazil when he came on, I know we talked about it before, Matt, but I think he crossed the ball very, very well and probably about four or five times in the last 20 minutes, and Sandro Wagner probably should have scored those chances. And I think if Germany change up their approach, you look at Sané, he doesn't really cross. He's definitely an attacking winger that goes at defenders. Draxler is pretty much the same. Mm-hmm. You can make a case for Brandt being the same, but I think Brandt's delivery is probably one of the best out of all of those wingers because all the other wingers are designed to do different things. And Germany do need a winger that delivers the ball.
But we've also been talking about two.
On the right.
We've also been talking about two or maybe three wing-backs who also deliver fantastic balls, and whether it's Kimmich on the right or whether it's either of Hector or Plattenhardt or even Max, who's not going, from the left. So I'm not sure if Julian Brandt's crossing or dead ball delivery is really an argument, especially because he was only putting those balls in the last 15 minutes against Brazil because Löw had been forced to go long to Sandro Wagner at front anyway, which I don't think is really a valid plan A. I'm not sure if that argument totally holds water. I think if it comes to players that you want to be able to break down mass defences, which is often going to be the case with Germany at the World Cup, then you need to have players who are going to be producing those sort of defence splitting balls more frequently than Brandt, i.e. players like Özil, players like Reus, like Müller.
I mean, Özil's a separate position. If we're just talking at wingers, I think Sané does that. I think Draxler does that. I think Reus can do that. But I think Brandt has threaded the ball pretty well for Leverkusen this season in those situations. I think you're spoilt for choice. Let's make no bones about it.
Yeah.
I mean, Germany are one of these countries that has more wingers than they need. But now looking at it, I've picked five wingers. If he plays 3-5-2, which he might well do at times, he's probably going to take one more central, so you lose a winger. He said in the last squad selection that there's still time for Reus and Götze because he omitted both of them.
Right.
I think if they're both fit, they both go. And Marco Reus, he has to go, right? If he's fit.
Well, here's the interesting thing.
Because he didn't go to the last one. He didn't go to the Brazil one, right? And the guy, everybody, they had a shirt up for him when they won in Brazil. He should have been at that World Cup. And I think there would be a certain feeling in the squad. There might be 1 or 2% that's, we've got to do this for Marco. We've got to try and keep him in this competition for as long as possible.
At the same time, I an interview was brought to my attention where, if I'm paraphrasing this correctly, basically Marco Reus said, the national team part of my career has kind of passed me by.
Hmm.
So he would understand if he wasn't ever selected for a World Cup team.
I mean,
at the same time, a few weeks ago, he said his three goals, season goals, is to get back to the Champions League with Dortmund, win the Europa League, which obviously isn't going to happen anymore, and to make the Germany team. So I think he still wants to go, even though I think it's basically PTSD for him. If he makes it to the final cut. And he's in those final friendlies.
And then he gets injured.
Yeah. I think if he's in the final friendlies, you know those
they won't play him.
Those bubble things, those like bubble bumper soccer ball, like things
where
that
you
run around
them.
And you hold it
hold
it like with your hands close to your chest and you basically bump into each other. That's basically what Marco Reus is gonna have to play with just to make sure he just does not get hurt. So I think that Marco Reus goes. I agree with you, though. I think Marco Reus goes if he's fit. Let's go to attacking. Let's go to now behind the striker. And we went. I think there's a couple things that Liv can do with Müller behind the striker. But how many options do you have behind the striker? John's putting up number two.
Two/three, depending on where you put Müller.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So and Müller's in.
So Özil, I think, is the lock.
Yeah.
And do we all think that Lars Stindl is going to go?
Yeah, but as not in the same role as Götze, striker. Or Özil, more of a striker. Although,
I think Götze goes as the other attacking midfielder.
Yeah, really?
Exactly. Yeah.
I don't think Götze is anywhere close to this.
Interesting.
I do. See, I think he's been, apart from the past couple of weeks for Dortmund, I think he's been fine.
I think he gets back to...
But there's been players that have been better than him.
Who?
Well, Lars Stindl has been better.
Lars Stindl goes.
He's had an absolute shocker.
Yeah, Lars Stindl goes.
He's not
as a striker.
I think up until the game against Hoffenheim, he hadn't scored in 1,400 minutes or something ridiculous.
Yeah, but he came on. But he still came on.
No, and I'm not.
He's
no.
still performing in the national team.
This time.
This is Lukas Podolski, basically.
This time.
Ooh, no.
Comparing Lukas Podolski to Lars Stindl.
Different characters.
But I mean, Lukas Podolski had a reputation of not doing things at his club.
This time last year, I had taken him, and was correct. Was right to take him to the to the Confed Cup, and he was good at the Confed Cup, but again, form is such an important thing.
Yeah, definitely.
And Lars Stindl, as much as I admire him as a player and as a captain and as a goal scorer, and I love that the instinct that he has of arriving in the box at the right time, and he has a proper goal scorer's instinct. He's been one of the main culprits of Borussia Mönchengladbach's collapse in the past in the past 10 or 11 weeks.
Definitely.
For me, no, he sneaked into my squad up front only because Germany have no other strikers.
Okay. Well, I have Stindl going instead of Brandt because I think again
Jonathan Harding's head has just exploded.
He's going to explode. But again, I just think that Stindl is, after his impressive Confed Cup, I think Stindl is not one of his guys.
You know, Andre Schürrle goes if he's fit.
I don't think Andre Schürrle goes.
Schürrle's one
you've
of those guys.
You've been saying for the past half an hour, one of those
he is
guys.
One, he's like the number
Schürrle
one
is the guy.
He's the guy. He goes if he's fit and he's playing.
I wouldn't take him, but Lerv will.
But you didn't include him in your wingers.
No,
then.
I wouldn't take him.
I wouldn't either,
but
Lerv will.
Lerv will, because he likes him.
Yeah.
And he's one of his guys. And he crossed the ball for Götze to score the winning goal in 2014.
Yeah, but I think that... you saw that
he's one of those guys, mate.
His usage pattern, though, has gone down.
Doesn't matter. He's one of those guys.
Yeah, but he barely played in qualifying.
He's one of those guys, mate. What do you want me to say? Yeah. Andre Schürrle is probably the only winger out of those selections, the ones that we've listed. And you know what? Part of me would take him because he's only the only winger out of that that tracks back, that, like, consistently.
In fairness, I thought just going on the game against Brazil, I thought Leroy Sané tracked well.
Yeah, he was all right. He was all right. But he's not going
to
do it. He's not going to do it all the time. Yeah. Schürrle's the winger that you can like expect to have maybe two moments of attacking brilliance, but you'll be like, wow, their right winger was really quiet. Yeah, because Andre Schürrle is doing the hard yards.
That's why
Löw likes him.
And if you look back, I'm not just thinking about his setup for Götze in the final, but he does set up key goals.
He does.
He's done on two or three occasions for Dortmund since him, Götze and Reus have been playing together at Dortmund.
He's a good guy.
They've combined a couple of times. He is capable of that. He's also capable of banging shots into Rose Ed.
He's a good guy.
The one thing that I think he does the best is he takes like at least five steps before he gears up for a shot. He gets into these great positions, and it's like Gonzalo Castro syndrome. He just takes forever.
Mario, where are you?
Yeah,
he's looking for him.
Exactly.
So you think Stindl goes with Özil, but not Götze? I think if Götze gets back to his form that we were talking about, I think...
Does he get back to his form?
I think there's enough time.
And I think for all of the difficulties that he had when he started the season with Dortmund, he's actually been... And Dortmund have had a dark season. He's actually been one of their very few rays of light.
Okay.
So strikers.
Yeah, so let's go to strikers now. This is... I think this is also one of the ones that...
Also, before we get on to that, just a quick word that we have 100% that Özil is starting.
Özil starts.
Özil starts. Well, we'll get to the starting... We'll get to the starters soon. Yeah.
Needed that pointing out.
Two strikers. So I have two strikers as well. Yeah. Matt?
Three, four if you count Stindl as a proper striker.
Three?
Yeah.
Well, if you include Stindl, which we have said he's in the
wait,
10
roles.
Although having got to the end of this, I may be tempted to kick one of them out and put Goretzka back in.
Okay.
But we'll get to that.
We'll get to
that.
Okay, who have you got?
Timo Werner is obviously
Timo Werner,
one,
I think,
starting.
Yeah. Definitely.
Deserves it. And top player.
Definitely.
I mean, absolutely. I have a feeling that I'm going to be wrong, but I still think Sandro Wagner goes.
I think he will as well. And I think
I don't think Gomez goes.
Exactly. Yeah. I think there's a chance that Sandro Wagner might even edge out Gomez.
Yeah. Well, actually, but you
Despite Gomez being one of Lev's guys.
Yeah.
I was watching your coverage during the game, though, and what you said was that he was basically left all by himself.
Yeah, he was. But that
that's also partly down to his
That's
goals.
Also partly down to him. Yeah. I mean, he was
isolated.
He didn't
win anything in the air.
He was isolated, but at the same time, I thought it was the wrong approach of Löw to play Gomez against, you know, the idea was big Brazilian centre-backs, how are we going to combat that? Let's play a big striker. Wrong. And you saw that, because when he came off and you brought on Stindl and you had Brandt wide, they suddenly looked a lot better. And then Werner later on, they suddenly looked a lot better playing that Klein, you know? And actually, that's the way that Germany are good at playing. Mm-hmm. They've got to get away from this plan B, plan C thing they had at the Euros, which worked then, but won't work now. Gomez was important at the Euros. He provided that other option. I think that option is dead now for Germany.
I don't think it's dead. I just think Sandro Wagner can do it better.
Yeah, but I think he does it differently. Sandro Wagner's movement through the line, said back and coming back and playing that ball, he holds the ball up way better than Gomez.
Yeah.
And he's involved in the attack much better.
Gomez, I think one of his weaknesses is he's never been that good at playing with his back to goal.
No. And his touch is rubbish. Yeah. So, well, you know, relatively.
Yeah. Doesn't he? Whenever he passes the ball, I feel like at least 40% of the time he falls down.
Yeah.
Whether it's like in central midfield or whether it's the top of the penalty area, like he might be like just passed, like laying off for someone, he will just fall down.
But I think this is the thing, right? He is one of Löw's guys.
Yeah.
And I think that if the end of the season comes and he scored 15 goals for Stuttgart and they finish in a European spot, Mario Gomez goes to the World Cup. And I think if that's at the expense of Sandro Wagner, that's a big mistake from Löw, in my opinion.
And it was also a massive shame for Sandro Wagner.
Yeah,
I think they were correctly. Yeah, exactly. I think they were absolutely correctly doubts as when he went to Bayern, saying, well, what are you doing? You're not going to get a game. You're putting your World Cup chances on the line. I think we were all right to doubt that, but I think so far he's proved people wrong. He said that, no, this is... It seems to have paid off. He's scoring goals for Bayern. He's getting his chance. He's looking impressive for Germany. He adds the various things that we've listed that Gomez doesn't, whether it's dropping back, whether it's timing his runs better, whether it's knowing whether it's worth attacking the front post or the back post. And we saw that with the crosses that Brandt was hitting him with. And I think it's come off and something to be a huge personal shame for him as well if he didn't go. I think he's deserved it as much as some of us maybe doubted it at the time. I think he deserved it, so
definitely.
I will take him. But again, as I said, that can't be plan A. Not against a Brazil team, which Löw even said was going to sit deep. So why try and break them down like that?
Brazil played really well.
Yeah, they did. For the first half,
but I just found it baffling that before the game, Löw. I mean, I hadn't watched Brazil play once, so I'm not going to pretend I knew what was going to come.
Yeah.
But all I heard was Löw say that. Well. They're defensively more stable, more well organised, sit a bit deeper, and he still tried to break it down with big balls up to Mario Gomez.
Confusing.
I thought that was the absolutely perfect chance then to play someone like Werner up front and stretch them.
Exactly. And considering his game plan apparently from the first 10 minutes was to use the 7-1 psychology and score early to make them think about 7-1 again.
Yeah.
Well, if that was the plan, you played the wrong game plan because all you did was long balls.
I thought it was very odd, but I think, Werner, not just on his own, but he was so key, especially last season, to the way Red Bull played and it took teams by surprise because he is so explosive. He's constantly on the last man. His runs are unpredictable. He's deadly in front of goal. That would be absolutely lethal at the World Cup.
Yeah. Well, I was also just thinking, who do you think would best embody Miroslav Klose role?
Timo Werner,
but he's...
No, I mean... But he's more explosive.
He's way more explosive. Right. I mean, in terms of... It's hard. Klose was a unique player.
Because at the beginning of the World Cup, you had Mario Götze starting up top.
Yeah.
And Löw figured out that I actually need to use Miroslav Klose because I need an actual forward in my team.
But that's what I think he's
tried... That's what I think Sandro Wagner is. He's the actual forward in the team. That has been playing there for his entire career.
Yeah, it's going to guarantee them goals, isn't it?
And even if you try to do taxes to get away from the the traditional, quote unquote, traditional number nine. But you can go back to it with a guy like Sandro.
Yeah, but Wagner offers, and the positive of Wagner is that he offers more. He offers much more than Gomez. Gomez is that, but Wagner is that plus more.
Right. So
starting 11.
All right, starting 11. Before we get to our starting 11, I've been waiting on this question for since last week. Before we get to what we actually think the starting 11 is, did we already see the starting 11 against Spain?
Oh, interesting.
I didn't watch the Spain game. You caught me out.
The lineup against Spain was Ter Stegen in goal, Kimmich, Hummels, Boateng, Hector. Then you had Khedira and Cruz. And then you had...
Match like lottery over here. And the bonus ball is...
Oh, and then Müller, Özil, and Draxler with Werner up front.
I think it's close, but I don't think...
My 11 is one out.
So who's the one out in that lineup?
Leroy Sané starting.
Yeah. Starting. That's. I think Müller not originally. Yeah. But
I think we can agree on. I think it'll be close to that game. I think we can agree on the back five there.
Right. Yeah.
So the four and the keeper. I think if Ilkay Gundogan keeps playing the way he's playing, then I think he starts with Kroos because I think he's been playing pretty exceptional football for Man City.
Isn't that dangerous? I mean, I'm just asking also because I want to know. Isn't that dangerous, though, to play Cruz and Gundogan together? No. Because you don't have someone in front of the back four that can track back and...
Gundogan is very good on his day when he's at it, at winning the ball back in transition. That was one of the things he did best at Dortmund, and he's very good at doing it at City. And then driving forward. Kroos is that guy who just... keeps everything ticking. You don't even know that he's passed 700 times. The temptation of playing Khedira is that you have someone who's a little deeper and can do that tidying up. But Khedira's looked a little sloppy at times. And I'm not saying that he hasn't got value. He's got huge value to this team. And there will be times where Germany do need to play him instead. I think you just can't not start Gundogan, who, in my opinion, has probably been the most informed central midfielder in the last... 4 months, 3 months. He's been amazing since his...
Oh, outside of Cruz. I think Cruz is...
I think he's up there with Cruz, to be honest.
And yet I thought both were par.
Yeah, they were. They were both. But I mean, Brazil won game, And he said
and again,
afterwards.
Like I said, Brazil played really well, and especially in the first half.
And Gundogan said afterwards, you know what? We played badly. We had one of those games. I'm sorry. You know, it happens. But I wouldn't rate his performance or his on that alone.
I think one more argument in favour of Gundogan would be his potential to chip in with goals as well.
Definitely.
Thinking particularly of the FC Basel game that City went
to. Oh, that goal was amazing.
5-0, 6-0. Turned off at half-time. you're right. He's picking up balls in front of the back four, further forward, shots on goal, a complete midfield performance. So, yeah, I mean, if you started him ahead of... I've got Sami Khedira in, but if you started Gundogan ahead of him, I wouldn't have complaints about that either.
So wingers.
So the other question about that starting 11 is, I think Draxler and Sané, right? Those two, or do you think that should start instead of?
No, for me, I've got them both starting.
Probably
Draxler on the right, Sané on the left. Yeah. I just think the two of them are in such incredible
form.
So
my temptation would be to play Müller on the right.
If Draxler is on the Draxler is on the left and Sané's on the right.
All the way around.
All right, other way around. That means that one of Müller and Özil would have to sit.
I'm starting Özil.
You wouldn't start Müller?
No.
The only guy that could break the World Cup record.
That's not a reason to start him.
It's more of a question of, out of those three...
But he's been in tremendous form.
Out of those three behind Timo Werner, who are you going to take out of the team? Draxler, Özil, or Sané?
I'd take Draxler out because he's not playing.
Oh, I would take... Well, so here's my
Mbappe still gets in ahead of him.
Here's my argument for starting Draxler ahead of Sané, which I did not have before the international break.
That's a huge, bold choice there.
It is, but hear me out.
Let's hear it.
Who would you rather have...
Leroy.
Who would you rather have starting with the type of left back that Germany has?
Leroy Sané.
Okay. Who would you? Okay, and there's
he
two
wasn't
parts.
Expecting
of this.
That, Jeff.
This is the other part of it. Who would you rather have starting with Timo Werner?
Leroy Sané.
Okay, I would be more inclined to say
Julian Draxler.
Julian Draxler, because of the way, because I think it's going to be if because what I saw against Spain was Timo Werner was getting in behind the Spain defense a lot, and that's because Julian Draxler was getting the ball to him extremely well. Julian Draxler had an incredible game for against Spain, maybe the best game I have seen him in play in a Germany.
Oh, he was good in the Confed Cup. He was pretty good.
He was pretty good in the Confed Cup too. But this was, I mean, this was against. I mean, I think I still think Spain. It was a friendly, but Spain played all of their yeah, starting back true, six. True. So
also, I know I've put them on separate wings, but obviously they do tend to move around, and you wouldn't be surprised to see Özil or if you must start Muller in the middle, okay, one of them drift out wide and see Draxler going more through the centre. And I lost count of the amount of times during the first half against Brazil that I made that note of Draxler Sané, linking up together, yeah. quick passing midfielders, bypassing defenders. Often the final pass and final or final shot was lacking, but the combination's got so much potential. So again, another reason why I'd have both
yeah,
starting.
That's the temptation over Muller, because
they're both so much pace.
They're so powerful, they're so quick, they're so great with the ball at their feet, that actually to have that on both wings is a sort of a dual threat for any defence to deal with. The only reason I wouldn't start Draxler is kind of the same reason that we've talked about with other players, is game time. I mean, how often is he going to play? Is Mbappe still going to start ahead of him? You know, and is he really going to feature?
Let me throw this at you then. Is that necessarily a bad thing? Because Leroy Sané could end up playing almost 60 games this year for Manchester City.
Yeah. But I think he's
who knows how much he's going to have left by the time the World Cup comes around.
Yeah, but he's going to have played 60 games under Pep Guardiola. So as much as he might be physically knackered, he'll also be mentally much further along in terms of how much he's learned in that time.
Sure, true. But Pep Guardiola has a reputation of running his players into the ground.
Yeah, he does. But I think Leroy Sané is approaching that sort of the peak years of his career. And this tournament will certainly not be his last for Germany.
Right.
I just think it's difficult to not start someone who is going to be part of a league-winning team and potentially a European-winning team. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Matt.
don't know what you're talking about.
Because, and Lerva's talked about this, he even said in his press conference, Leroy's decision to join Manchester City was the right one. I said at the time that it was too soon. I went on record and said that he should have stayed another year at Schalke. I'm happy to admit that I was very wrong about that, because he has gone from a talented winger in patches to a superstar winger. And I think you can't not start him. Julian Draxler was at his best in the Confed Cup for Germany. And I was like, wow, he's nailed on starter. He has to play. And I think Julian Draxler thought that. And then PSG just did what they did. Right. And I think his life has been difficult from that point onwards. And, you know, what do you want to... that's why I can totally understand Matt's decision to play Sané and Draxler. Personally, I think you've got to try and feature Müller in there somewhere. I think yes. We're all agreed that Özil is playing in the 10.
Mm-hmm.
So that only leaves
he
you...
He is the number 10.
Well,
so
he's the best player in the Germany team, for me.
Yeah.
And if you take him... if you take him in that position, that only leaves you striker and right wing. And I would try Müller, but with the knowledge that if it didn't work, I could bring on Draxler. So,
yeah. Okay, so we've said a lot of things. I think the best thing to do before we move on is, why don't we all, just so we have it on the record, why don't we just all read through our 23, and that way people can...
We're on the record. We've already seen against Spain, my lineup was pretty much Joachim Löw's lineup.
So we're agreeing that Timo Werner should start, right?
For the entire squad, all 23. Yeah. So why don't we all read our 23? I can go first if you guys want. But John, leaning back, he looks like he's ready. He's good.
Okay, Ter Stegen, Neuer, Ulreich. Come on, Sven. Hummels, Boateng, Zule, Ginter. Controversial. Hector Kimmich, Gundogan, Kroos, Khedira, Goretzka. Sané, Brandt, Draxler, Royce, Müller, winger, right? Özil, Götze, Werner, Wagner, Stindl.
Okay, Matt.
Ter Stegen, Neuer, Leno, three goalkeepers. Seven defenders, Kimmich, Hummels, Rudiger, Boateng, Zule, Hector and Philipp Max, obviously. Nine midfielders.
Augsburg.
Toni Kroos, Sami Khedira, Ilkay Gundogan. Sané, Müller, Draxler, Royce, Götze, Özil, with the condition that if Royce is too badly injured, I'll put Goretzka in there for him. Strikers, Werner, Wagner, Gomez and Stindl, with the condition that I might swap Gomez for Goretzka.
Goalkeepers, I have three. I have Manuel Neuer, Marc-Andre Ter Stegen.
Notice Neuer going first there.
And Bernd Leno.
Yeah, that didn't go unnoticed, Davis.
Yeah, Neuer first.
Yeah. seven defenders, unfortunately for Matthias Ginter, even though I think they should take eight. Mats Hummels, Jerome Boateng, Niklas Süle, Antonio Rüdiger, and Marvin Plattenhardt, Joshua Kimmich, and Jonas Hector.
It's a shame Piszczek isn't German.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. midfielders, I have Toni Kroos, Mesut Özil, Sami Khedira. By the way, I have these all mixed up. That's why I'm reading it so slow. So Sami Khedira, Leon Goretzka, Julian Draxler, Ilkay Gundogan, Emre Can, and yeah. And then forwards, I have Thomas Müller, Timo Werner, Leroy Sané, Sandra Wagner, Lars Stindl, and if healthy, Marco Reus. During the international break, it's not like the Bundesliga didn't keep us entertained. And that is because Bayern Munich coaching situation has just blown up into oblivion. So I think the best way to start this discussion is to basically start with what actually happened or what is reported to have happened. So we will go back to actually a few months ago, where it seemed like, according to reports, the Bayern president, Uli Hoeneß, liked Julian Nagelsmann as the man to take over for Jupp Heynckes, who is said many times he's going to retire at the end of the season. Karl-Heinz Rummenigge liked Thomas Tuchel to take over Bayern Munich at the end of the season, and actually made even Bayern Munich or take over for Carlo Ancelotti when he was fired. Then last Friday, it seemed they had a conversation with Thomas Tuchel. It was reported that Uli Hoeneß got on board just before this conversation happened, I believe, with the fact that Thomas Tuchel would be the primary option for the club to take over for Jupp Heynckes. And Thomas Tuchel turned him down, saying that he has interests from other clubs. Now, since that point, Thomas Tuchel has been linked with clubs in England, namely Arsenal and Chelsea, and Paris Saint-Germain. And there was reports saying that he had a very good interview with Paris Saint-Germain and impressed him with his Germanicized French accent when he spoke almost fluent French. Then there's reports that came out that Ralf Hasenhüttl was going to be one of the coaches that's going to be the hottest commodities in the summer. Bild that said that Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund, who, by the way, also has a coach that has a contract expiring at the end of the season, are both keen on paying at least 10 million euros, or maybe up to 10 million euros, I should say, for Ralf Hasenhüttl. And the other name that was thrown in there was obviously Lucien Favre, too, who used to coach at Borussia Mönchengladbach, and he now coaches at Nice in France. There was a report that said from France that said he basically could be purchased for 3 million euros. So let's start with Thomas Tuchel first. Was it the right decision for him to turn down Bayern Munich?
Yeah, I read that he also said that he had grown tired of waiting for Bayern Munich because they took a long time to get back to him. Yes, I think it is the right decision for him to turn down Bayern Munich. I think there's been a lot said about the fact that Bayern Munich are one of the biggest clubs in the world, and no one disputes that. But you have to look at the right man for the right job in the right environment. And Thomas Tuchel is obviously a difficult man to work with, albeit an excellent educator and developer of players. I think that you need the right type of manager who can deal with Uli Hoeneß and Karl-Heinz Rummenigge being such huge figures at Bayern Munich. And I'm not sure that Thomas Tuchel is ready for that at the moment, at this stage in his career. Because whoever takes the Bayern Munich job needs to be able to get on board with the handshakes and the smiles and the nice that comes with being under Uli Hoeneß and Karl-Heinz Rummenigge, because they are such dominant figures. And I think Thomas Tuchel wants to be at a club where he is the man and he doesn't have to necessarily check things with others. I just think that's the reason behind him not doing
that. We both tweeted similar things, I think, when it actually happened. I basically said that Uli Hoeneß is driving the bus and he doesn't like backseat drivers. And Thomas Tuchel would be a backseat driver. So I didn't think that he was a fit to begin with.
Yeah, I think from a footballing point of view, I think Tuchel would actually fit quite well to Bayern and probably vice versa as well. But unfortunately, especially in the past couple of weeks of some of the things that have come out, Hoeneß and Rummenigge have created so much of a culture of around the club where, given the personalities involved, I can't see it fitting. So I think, John, you're completely right to say that. And it is a shame, because it's not just Kostum Thomas Tuchel, who I think would have been the ideal coach to bring them on to the next level. Also in Europe, where he showed, particularly before the incident with the bus attack, that he's got pedigree there. So I think they've missed out on that. Similarly, I think Hoeneß's, I think, quite disrespectful pursuit of Jupp Heynckes, trying to convince his so-called friend to stay and publicly trying to convince him of that, I think has not really been the actions of a friend. I don't think he's done himself any favours there. And obviously they've lost out on that, and Jupp Heynckes is right to stand his ground. And with all the, dilly-dallying around, which is so surprising for a club of Bayern Munich's structure and stature and how well they're set up, they've also gone and lost out on Ralf Hasenhüttl seemingly as well, who, albeit maybe a bit of an outside shot, right, was certainly not completely unsuited to taking the job.
Yeah, the one thing I missed is that in his press conference on Thursday, Ralf Hasenhüttl essentially said, well, Bayern Munich, who knows what's going to happen with them, and Borussia Dortmund, the last time I checked, already have an Austrian coach. So, and he's also mentioned that he's having discussions with RB Leipzig to extend his contract, which runs only until the end of next season, beyond 2019 and to the future. It is baffling the fact that Bayern Munich have screwed up their coaching situation to this extent, to the point where I really don't know what option that they can go into next.
Whether you look at the Tuchel situation, the Hasenhüttl situation, the Nagelsmann situation before that, discussions around Favre or whoever else it might be, it all comes down to this power struggle between Uli Hoeneß and Karl-Heinz Rummenigge. Mm. Hoeneß, who embodies this Mia San Mia Bavarian spirit of Bayern Munich, and Rummenigge, who's covered himself in even more glory this week by coming out against the democratic vote at the DFL in favour of retaining 50+1.
He was once a world-class striker, loved that.
Yeah, criticising a vote that he personally wasn't actually present at. So he's shown his true colours this week as well. I just think it's surprising because you can criticise Bayern Munich for a lot of things, but the way the club is set up, the way they generate their own revenue, their own sponsorship deals, their investments in youth, in good German players, so much of it is laudable. And that's why it's just come as such a shock to me that they've allowed this situation, this idea of, it's still the succession to Guardiola. That's still what we're talking about.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
They've managed to cock it up.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting.
I just find it baffling.
It's interesting that they've done it so publicly as well. I think that's the thing. You can imagine these conversations happening behind closed doors. But actually for a club of Bayern Munich's, stature, to have these conversations so open, that's what surprises me the most. We've publicly shown that we've missed out on the three targets that we might have been considering. That's not like Bayern Munich. You can understand there being power struggles or disagreements between Hoeneß and Rummenigge, but not on a stage in front of everybody. And I think that's what's surprising. I think
they've always managed to show a united front,
yeah,
haven't they?
And that's what's been so impressive about them. You can say what you want about their almighty power over everyone else, but they tend to get their job done. Except in this instance, they haven't. I think Hasenhüttl will be best suited. And he's played for the second team. He's Austrian, so he's only a hop, skip, and a jump from there in terms of the culture and the environment of living in Munich.
Coached in Bavaria before too. At Ingolstadt.
I think he's got the right mindset. He's worked with some really good players at Leipzig and brought them on, and he's got the right kind of tactical approach, I think, to try at least to take Bayern forward as they move away from Robin and Ribery and towards the next era.
Ironically, I actually think from a footballing point of view, his Hasenhüttl's tactical philosophy might even be better suited and a more natural fit to Bayern Munich than to the aggressive pressing, quick transition football that Ralf Rangnick wants at Red Bull.
That's true.
And from what I've heard, that's actually been one of the sticking points in Hasenhüttl signing this new contract with Red Bulls.
That he wants to do it more his way.
Exactly, because obviously the power there is with Rangnick. That is Rangnick's. It's still Rangnick's team.
This is love.
It's his toy.
Yeah.
And he's been given the resources to implement the style of football which he's developed himself over the past 10, 15 years, and that's absolutely fine. Oliver Mintzlaff backs that up, because I don't think Oliver Mintzlaff is capable of thinking of anything else. But I think that's the sticking point, especially this season. Hasenhüttl has had Red Bull playing slightly less aggressively. Whether that's been in...
it's paid off. Look at where they are.
Yeah. Well, obviously, it's not been as successful as last season, but whether it's more... Maybe it's acknowledging the fact that you have to play in Europe as well.
I mean, he's also come out often and said that they've already played more games... Yeah. This season than they played all of last season.
Yeah, they're still in Europe.
Yeah. And from that point of view, I'd probably side with Hasenhüttl there and say that, yeah, he's probably taken the right step to preserve his team. It's still a very young team. To have them playing that full throttle football week in, week out was never going to work the same way as it did in their first season in the Bundesliga.
Absolutely.
So I think from that point of view, yeah, that more slightly more possession-based football, not too dissimilar to Thomas Tuchel at Dortmund, in all honesty, would actually be a more natural fit at Bayern, arguably.
You said that, Jonathan, I'm looking at you, you said that Hasenhüttl would be the best option.
Yeah.
What I thought was interesting is that there was also comments that he said in Sportbild, basically, and there's other players that supported the story as well, that there is a lot of players with a lot of egos at Leipzig, and he came out publicly and said... about Timo Werner, essentially, if we are up by 4-0 and he hasn't scored, he still will not be happy. Do you have any concerns that Ralf Hasenhüttl would be able to manage the egos that are at Bayern Munich?
I think anybody who hasn't got any experience in doing that always has to dive into a certain level of the deep end in terms of dealing with that, because Bayern Munich is, you know, such a massive club and has such huge players in terms of the ego. But I think Ralf Hasenhüttl, the person, is also very well equipped to handle those types of things. I mean, I read an interview with him, I think it was a year ago, in Socrates magazine, where he talked about what is a successful manager. He has a very philosophical approach to success and to development. He knows how to handle different players. And, you know, a number of people in and around Leipzig have said that the team will run through walls for him so that he doesn't get upset, so that they can keep him happy. Well, who else have we heard that about? Yeah. Everybody talks about Jurgen Klopp that way.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And there's, I'm not comparing the two, but in terms of motivation, in terms of looking after his players, you only need to look at the way that Hasenhüttl is with some of those players after the way that they play and some of the wins. There's hugs, there's high fives, there's a close bond there. I think he has all of the equipment in terms of, you know, the skills and the mental strength to do the job in Bayern.
Let's go quickly back to the situation at Bayern Munich, because I'm trying to find, like, the perspective we got to put this in, because they're still we're recording this podcast before match day 28, where they could conceivably be champions afterwards. They have a 17-point gap at the top of the table. It's going to be their sixth Bundesliga title in a row, and they are in the quarterfinals of the Champions League once again for, I think, the eighth consecutive time, or maybe ninth. Someone will fact check me on this later.
Semi-finals of the German Cup.
Yeah, and in the semifinals of the German Cup. How big of a deal is this? Is this something that... is this something that could blow up Bayern Munich? Or are they going to keep ticking on like they usually do?
No, I think it's a huge appointment. You know, it's a good comparison to Germany right now, you know? And Germany at the top of the tree. Löw said it, you know, we're the hunted. He said it this week ahead of those friendlies, or last week. Bayern Munich are the hunted team. Whoever takes this job on cannot slip. The expectation is the seventh title. The expectation is the semi-finals of the Champions League. The expectation is the German Cup. There is no pause. Because the moment that you take your foot off the gas, you offer the opportunity. You've lost, yeah, absolutely. But you also offer the opportunity to other teams in Germany. Now, whether the other teams in Germany are even in a state to compete or take advantage of that is a whole other podcast.
Right.
But from a Bayern Munich perspective, you can't even offer them the opportunity to do that. And I think that's why the appointment of the next head coach has to be spot on. You can't give them two or three breathing, you know, years in that sense. Look what happened last time they did that. Borussia Dortmund won the title twice. Mm-hmm. You can't pause. And the transition that Bayern Munich has to make, it's a huge, huge job. Just not just because of the expectation, but the transition away from Robin and Ribery will happen in that coach's tenure. They might lose Lewandowski. They have to put building blocks into place so that the next coach or the next generation of Bayern Munich is just as good as the one we're watching now. Mm-hmm.
Some of the odds for who would take over Bayern Munich were actually really funny. I mean, there was Jose Mourinho was on that list. Felix Magath, I think, was 100-1 to take over the Bayern Munich job. To close this podcast that now is over an hour long, who do you tip right now to be Bayern Munich coach next season?
Right now, I wouldn't be surprised. To pick a name out of the blue, literally running out of options because they've blown the chance with so many.
Yep.
Lucien Favre, although I actually probably think he'd probably be more likely to end up at Dortmund. Mm. But yeah, Lucien Favre, because there's no one else left.
Okay, Lucien Favre.
I think Hasenhüttl can still work it out with him.
Yeah. I think Hasenhüttl can work it out.
I would like to see Hasenhüttl there.
I think Hasenhüttl goes to Bayern.
Favre goes to Dortmund.
Favre goes to Dortmund.
And Julian Nagelsmann.
And
to
Nagelsmann stays at Hoffenheim.
Oh no! I think the Nagelsmann goes to Leipzig, but that's again for another another podcast.
Interesting.
All right, that'll do it for this week's edition of Tribuna Weekly. You can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, and if you do, give us some stars and a friendly review. You can also like our Tribuna Podcast Facebook page and follow us on Twitter at Tribuna Podcast. You can find Matt Ford at Matt_4D. Jonathan Harding at JohnBlog66, 2 G's and 2 6's, and I'm at Davis_Benoptor. Before we go, here's our stat of the week. Germany's 1-0 loss to Brazil ended a 22-match unbeaten run that spanned all the way back to the semifinals of Euro 2016. It was just one game shy of the German record streak from October 1978 to December 1980 under Jupp Derwall. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back on Monday.